Well, good afternoon. Thank you very much for coming to hear me speak. And, I mean, I'd love to have a packed crowd, but I'm very excited to have you guys here. I mean, I'm like George Bush at a recount excited, but, I mean, that's how things go. The category of this forum is zero-day defense, but I'm going to be talking about how such a concept cannot possibly exist. The concept I will be talking about involves hardening security for hostile environments, such as the Riviera Hotel this weekend. This concept was built out of working with all of you over several years, so it's something I brought along, and I'm really interested in hearing more about what people say about it and whatnot. Am I going too fast? Other people said that some of the speakers were too fast earlier. Okay. Now, the reason why our jobs exist is because of people. People in our industry, like every industry, and not just ours, are at best 99% competent and at worst intentionally malicious, which leads me into my topic. That there are no secure systems, and therefore a better network security model will incorporate logic for an attack scenario that is unaccounted for. Simply put, it should acknowledge that it might fail and plan to fail intelligently. I played college football at an engineering school, and that's what we did. We failed intelligently. So, one solution to doing this is to classify all network traffic into two separate groups. Either we've seen it, and we know it's not an attack, or we've never seen it, and we don't have a clue. Sorry. If we have seen the traffic, for example, like a static web page, a GET request, then we're going to send this to our real services. It's something we know about. If we have never seen it, then it can't be trusted. And so what we're going to do is we're going to redirect that traffic to what I'm calling an active honeypot. And that's pretty much an exact mirror of our real services, hosting everything minus the actual sensitive data. Since all traffic is being NATed, it will be assumed that load balance is taking effect and not redirection to a honeypot. And I'll be talking more about virtual machines. And, I mean, you can somewhat tell if you're on a virtual machine or not, but that's somewhat negligible. Okay. A further method of securing and hardening the system would be to deploy a default deny intrusion prevention system that would only allow network traffic into the trusted zone once that traffic has been previously seen in the honeypot and caused no malintent. Network security should be done in layers. The fundamental flaw with many security systems is they attempt to account for every possible scenario. In my opinion, if you're going to spend millions attempting to predict the future, why not try the state lottery or the Super Bowl? I mean, right now in this room, there are probably people sitting on knowledge that is in no network security model whatsoever. And simply because people like you know that people like you exist, we need to incorporate a model into network security that is prepared to be breached. And that's what the Statue of Liberty is. It's a security model that is prepared for a successful attack. And let me clarify first that this is a system that is at least prepared. I mean, I still do not believe that even this system is secure at all. What I want people in our industry to think about is how they might deploy this idea and how they might improve on it. I'm planning on releasing all code that I've written and configuration files and associated with it in hopes that people like you will change things, modify it, and hopefully make it a lot better than I did. Also, if you have any problems understanding me, I mean, I have a wicked bad Boston accent. So, I mean, a lot of people say, what's a car, things of that sort. But we work in high tech, so dealing with an accent comes to the territory. Okay, back to business. Now, security is a word that is meaningless without context. I mean, secure from what? Secure from whom? Secure from an individual attacker? Secure from a well-funded group of security experts? What about an angry sysadmin who is about to quit? The people variable will never be able to control, so we have to focus on the networks. So our reality is there are no secure systems, and people are incompetent jerks. Now, I'm baffled why most security systems don't have a feature that says, here's what we do when life happens, where we're not prepared for what just occurred. I mean, the main reason for that is marketing and sales. I mean, my girlfriend's in sales, that's why I know that. But wouldn't it be hilarious, but realistic, if a security vendor were to say, if you want to be completely secure, just pull the plug. I mean, after a successful breach, assuming the system knows it was breached, the blame game usually seems to be more important than fixing what happened. Okay, right here is an example of why I'm a terrible artist. If you saw the opening page, it obviously was not drawn by me. But what this right here is a very simplistic layered security model. And, I mean, right now, a very similar version of this is probably being deployed at thousands of locations across the country. Across the world, actually. And the first layer of our model on the previous page showed a firewall, and by default, that firewall should just block everything. I mean, I'm talking 100% network traffic, and not even respond to any pings. I mean, no TCP resets, just silent drops. For all intents and purposes, a paperweight on a rack. And if you absolutely must let people use your network, I mean, keep them as highly limited as possible. And then after our default deny IPS, we have a revolving door that cannot possibly account for every possible scenario. Especially new scenarios that arise far faster than security models can keep up with. Hey, I'm really fired up. More people are coming. I'm really happy you guys are here. Cheers. More issues. On top of which most CAN solutions don't have any logic for custom applications they're protecting. And if they do, it's not highly tailored, and it's looking for really general things like SQL injections and things of that sort. I mean, pen testing takes place on three levels. First is the operating system level and network infrastructure. Second level is the hosting network application, IIS, Apache, whatever. And the third is the custom solution layer, like custom CGI scripts and things of that sort. Technically, there are four layers of pen testing if you count social engineering, but earlier we already decided that people are useless, so there's no point in trying to fix that. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm beating this point to the ground. Default pass IPS with a large rule set will never be a solution to securing a system against a professional with resources. They will stop most attempts by amateurs using well-documented techniques or using proof-of-concept code they ripped off a full disclosure. And I'm sad to say, they'll stop most techniques that are well documented. Pretty much we need our IPS to live up to the prevention part, to be less trusting and act more like our firewall. I mean, like at a bouncer at like a private party. If we don't know you, you aren't coming in. All right, so now we have a more secure system because we have drastically limited what the criteria is to gain interest into our trusted zone. Nothing comes through if we haven't previously seen it before. Then we accept traffic patterns that we know of and allow them from there. Or we reject it. Our default deny IPS keeps track of the 120 events that we know are copacetic in our system and doesn't bother worrying about 7,500 possible attack scenarios and worrying about new attacks. I mean, you guys probably look at full disclosure and bug track every day. Every day, about 30 to 70 rumored new attacks come out from various systems. I mean, it's keeping up with that. You're always five steps behind. Also, any person who has spent any time looking at ethereal and a spanning port in a network or looked in like /var logs, I mean, network traffic is very, very repetitive. And in my opinion, just knowing what's capable and working with those opposed to guessing the future is a lot more feasible of a solution. Okay, in solving one problem, we've created another. How do we qualify network traffic efficiently? We can't turn qualifying traffic into a queue like at the DMV because it'll just take forever. I mean, want to get this project more publicly accessible and have more people looking at it. This is a spot where I really want people to add their own two cents into and say, you know what, this is a great way to more efficiently qualify what I actually want in my network. Right now, in terms of the Statue of Liberty, right now my biggest concern is whether or not to create like an OpenBSD release, but that will cause a problem in terms of bandwidth as I've had people take the whole thing down off my server. But I wouldn't want to have people having to recompile a kernel in a system. But I'll get more into the nuts and bolts of the system entails in the next few slides. Okay, this is the fun stuff. This is the basic plan of the Statue of Liberty. I hammered together a lot of open source technology to make this happen. For example, I mean, in the box it is running Snort, and in my Etsy Snort rules, I'm pretty much writing rules that just correspond to traffic that I know. And within OpenBSD's packet filter engine is the RDR, or redirect action, that's utilized in writing your rule files and whatnot. It's in /etcpf.conf. And within that, within the kernel is pf.c. And I modified the pf get translation function to redirect the NAT redirection. And if my event in Snort takes place, basically, when you have the NAT going on, traffic hits it, and it will be redirected. But I took that function and said, if a Boolean value exists as the alert took place, redirect that redirection. Now, that was accomplished by modifying a few structs, the PF adder struct for one. I had to update the state table, then call PF route function, and basically, I redirected the redirection to a different location based on the fact that there was a rule saying that I like this traffic, send it to the real place. Other than that, I'm going to send it to my active honeypot, and I really like that. So pretty much by default, traffic was not going to the real services. But pretty much this whole process of me making this tool, it's just a really big hack right now. I mean, I would really like someone as talented as Daniel Hartmeyer to write a more elegant solution. And right now the biggest problem I faced in coding this was having my snort alerts and their logs being read and make a decision based off that. I mean, it was a very difficult thing to do, and it's a big hack right now. So I'm looking forward to some of the people in the room who are hardcore kernel guys looking at my code and saying, what the hell is this? But I mean, still, I mean, I didn't have a ton of time to write the code either. I wanted mostly to be working than to have it be elegant. And also my job that pays for my rent and beer also cuts into the time a little bit. I mean, it's a good thing that my girlfriend works in this industry too and can tolerate me spending so much time at work and working on pet projects. And she's pretty cute too. All right, here we go. In the guts. I chose OpenBSD because, I mean, I've seen OpenBSD outperform commercial solutions in terms of stability for bidirectional traffic manipulation. I mean, you do eventually hit a ceiling in terms of maximum traffic in the kernel, and you'll notice that the CPU will be completely pegged because of just doing interrupts over and over again. But all in all, I mean, OpenBSD is just a great system. Another main reason for using OpenBSD was how easy it was to syn proxy a stream. If the traffic might be malicious, I want 100% of it going to my HoneyNet gateway. Also, I found it easier to describe good traffic in a snort rule than bad. I mean, I could get more specific. Especially since I authored all my test network, it was pretty much a PHP front end to a MySQL back end, so I knew the limits of my scripts and the limits of my database, so I pretty much could very closely tailor what I wanted to get into my real network, which made it very, very easy for me to do that. It'd be a little bit more difficult if you had a more commercial solution and you have people writing the security system who did not author the back end of it, but we'll get more into that in terms of making the project more efficient later on. Okay, active honeypots. Anyone who's played the HoneyNet project is familiar with the setup. Basically, the topology entails a HoneyNet gateway, and the purpose of this gateway is to keep 100% of the traffic inside of the honeypots. Any traffic that goes in the gateway and attempts to leave, suspect, so you can't really trust that at all. Now, my targeted system has to be as similar to the real services as possible. I mean, pretty much I want someone who's attempting to, say, my sysadmin who left, who has carnal knowledge of my table names in my database, I want them to pretty much believe that they are on the real system and not a virtual machine running it. Also, my solution was to run the target systems on multiple instances of the VMware image. For starters, VMware is free now. But also, I mean, it was really important that I could preserve the environments. And also, on a subnote, I mean, hard disk space is getting so cheap, so having multiple VMs is very, very feasible, and memory is very cheap also. I mean, in my opinion, virtual networks are going to be more and more utilized for solutions. Okay, so basically what I really want to do with my VMware image is I want to spawn a new VM for every instance of the attack so I can preserve that environment. Because, I mean, a lot of you are at HD Moore's first talk 2 days ago on Metasploit 3. I mean, it's not always going to be showing a shell prompt right at the front of it. I mean, sometimes it'll be a lot more subtle. It may be someone gleaned information off of it or, I mean, who knows. Alright, the HoneyNet project uses a lot of different things I want to incorporate into it. I mean, it's already a canned project that works great, so I didn't want to change many of the things. And one of the things I really liked was the data control aspect of it. I mean, all traffic is kept away from non-HoneyNet systems. And you can also do a lot of bandwidth throttling, which I want to talk about later. It was very important in terms of limits of the system. And also data capture. Network traffic is captured completely, so you can recreate scenarios very, very easily in the system. I mean, it's all in all pretty good. All right, this comes into our other problem. What exactly are we looking for in terms of traffic classification? I mean, pretty much what we're looking for is any issue with the underlying operating system and every level of the platform. Pretty much we're looking to see everything from the system crash, if it began to seek out other IP addresses, or I mean, even something simple as if some jerk tried to put a tick mark into the web interface to see if the application is constructing raw SQL strings. All right, in a typical scenario one, the typical traffic flow would be something like our syn-proxied OpenBSD box would realize that we have a rule within snort that is that's basically like an HTTP request for /get/HTTP 1.0. And this would be most scenarios. If you look at your /var HTTP logs rules, I mean, the same things over and over and over again. Even if it's dynamic content, it's still very repetitive. Now, in scenario two, another flow of traffic comes through, and no snort rule is instantiated. So by default, we've assumed that this is traffic that we have never seen in a system, and it may be an attack. So traffic is routed to the HiNet gateway. I mean, does anyone find it dangerous that if you construct some randomly bizarre string in HTTP and send it to like bankofamerica.com, that string will actually hit their server and be processed by their network service? I mean, that's crazy. Our system is sending to the honeypot. I mean, I don't let strangers into my house. I mean, that's where I keep my beer and flat screen TV. I mean, in this scenario, traffic was not malicious, but I mean, I feel better about the situation in general. Scenario three, I let the stranger into my guest house, locks him inside where the TV has no cable and the fridge is filled with Odules. I mean, it's a much better attack. I mean, possibly we could have a new attack scenario. And, I mean, it could have been the old employee who was trying to get back into his old company. I mean, either way, this system is an attempt to account for a previously unseen attack scenario. Okay, this is where I get a little bit preachy. I mean, there'll be two kinds of new attacks that we're going to find. Pretty much, I mean, your mistakes or someone else's. And if it's your mistake, then, I mean, you got lucky. You get to, this is how you found it out, not on the front page of the news. And if it's someone else's mistake, I mean, I believe in informing the vendor and going through that whole process, even though, I mean, a lot of times you try to inform a vendor about something, you found the product, and they fight you every step of the way. But, I mean, I do understand what HD and some of the people are doing by forcing vendors to take responsibility and removing venue for exploit. Okay. And just like in group counseling, this is where I recognize my own flaws. These are the engineering concerns that I have, and I'm hoping a lot of people in this room and people who view the project are able to find better solutions to this. Now, my biggest concern was attacking the system, and I'm going to talk a lot more about that in the next slide. But the second biggest problem was the inefficiencies in the system in terms of creating and maintaining rules. I mean, it's sad to say, but some people prefer flexibility to insecurity. Another big problem was content changing. I mean, I know some people who are so afraid of commitment, they don't even like to write in pen, so why would they want to update their rules? Another problem would be maintaining keys and session-oriented traffic. I mean, what if an attack entailed several steps in a session where the first two or three steps were completely benign inside the rule set, but the fourth step, something we haven't seen yet? I mean, a solution to that might be adding content-aware proxying, but, I mean, that's going to add even more complexity to the system and something I really would prefer not to do. Okay, attacking the system directly, or confusing it by sending it traffic, intentionally invoking the system, possibly looking for a breaking point or muddling results. I mean, I've personally sent security equipment large volumes of traffic that I knew would instantiate rules because they typically leak the attack or even fail open. Most IPSs that are default pass with a lot of rule sets, by default, fail open. Ideally, I mean, I need to drink some water. I've been talking really fast. Ideally, the honeypot's only going to receive one instance of each attack. At that point, we take the virtual machine, we suspend it, analyze it later. Okay, here's my solution to attacking the system. I mean, pretty much what you want to do is stop repetitive attacks and stop known attacks hitting the system and causing problems with it. So a solution to attack the system is to use our old friend IPS. I mean, a lot of highly intelligent people spend a lot of time creating this technology. And, I mean, I did just contradict myself earlier. A default pass IPS would be very useful to sit in front of the Statue of Liberty to pretty much whittle down traffic so that if the honeypot catches it. Also, if the honeypot catches a new attack, you can much more quickly put it into your default pass IPS blocking rules on that. Okay, so in conclusion, network security models should incorporate logic to account for systems failing to recognize an attack scenario or not having logic for a new attack scenario. Also, for some acknowledgments I have, I mean, I really do like a lot of these open source projects because it's really in the spirit of what we're doing here in terms of security. I mean, if you divulge the instructions to what you did to create a piece of logic and have the whole community take a look at it in general, then, I mean, that's a much more secure model than keeping all the keys separate in terms of what happened. I mean, most people do not write secure software. The average software, time to market, I mean, security is something that's typically overlooked in way of profit. So people will be like, we'll push this to market, and then we'll patch it later on. And that's why open source is really a very, in my opinion, the only route to go if security would actually become closer to being achieved. Also, two other individuals, my company, Chuck McCauley and Seth Hardy, helped me write some of the code. They're both very intelligent guys, and want to make a point of thanking them. And thank you very much for coming and listening to me talk today. Does anyone have any questions? You know the Red Sox? I was hoping Dinesh would be here. I mean, Dinesh works at Tipping Point, and he always battles me back with different things because my full-time job is work at this company where we make pretty much exploits to run through systems, and he's usually good to go back and forth. But I saw him sitting right there. I thought it'd be great, but I mean, oh, thank you very much.